At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
This ship collected five different life forms from the darkest corners of the universe. Monsters.
Collision imminent.
Invasive species. Predatory.
We don't lock them down. It will be too late.
Beware, spoiler phobes! You have stumbled into A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast currently covering the FX on Hulu series Alien Earth. Back on the titular planet, Wendy is talking to the xenomorph and notices that Nibs got a teeny mind wipe. That rubs Arthur the wrong way, and he's summarily fired, maybe divorced, and undeniably face-hugged as part of Slightly and Morrow's exfiltration plot. Kirsch is at arbitration, where the Prodigy and Weyland-Yutani teams face off, but also seems very aware shit has hit the fan in the containment lab. This podcast is split into calm and storm sections. In the first calm section, we will only be talking about the first episodes of the series, up to the newest sixth episode of Alien Earth, titled The Fly. Then, after ample warning and at the displayed timestamp in the notes, we entered the storm section, where Neil and I will speculate where the rest of this season goes and how it connects to the wider franchise. Why, hello, I'm Dave Gonzalez, and I'm going to enjoy my week with my audio-visual tracking shut down.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm just an onion trying to figure out how to take care of a star. Welcome back to A Storm of Spoilers. Before we get started, I have the duties of doing some housekeeping. Of course, you're listening to this on Wednesday. We're back on schedule this week. Shout out to us. You will continue to get Alien Earth episodes for the next couple of weeks as the season winds down on Wednesday afternoons. You can also, sometimes a little bit later in the week, get it on YouTube if you prefer the visual medium, youtube.com/@DaveAndNeil, DA7EANDNEIL, if you would like to see our faces and facial hair as we do this same version of the podcast. So, you know, subscribe over there, like and comment, do all the things that the YouTube algorithm likes. We appreciate it. If you would like to spend some time with me, I will be back streaming this evening, Wednesday night, around 8 o'clock Central Standard Time at twitch.tv/Neilstradamus. We're going to play some Alien Isolation. I have not had my, this episode, Dave, wasn't scary enough for me. So I'm going to play a video game that's going to scare me. And, that should be fun. We're about halfway through the game and I anticipate making hopefully good progress and not getting killed by a xenomorph, quite as much this week. We'll see though. That should be fun. You can also join Dave and I if you want more of our podcast content over at patreon.com/DaveAndNeil for more content from this feed, from our mini projects. You can get a very special Twin Peaks rewatch project that we did. We did a Leftovers rewatch. We're doing a Hannibal rewatch project currently. And you also get weekly adventure podcasts, pop culture adventure podcasts, where we're currently in Samurai Syllabus Month watching, this week we're watching Lady Snowblood, very exciting stuff. So that has been very fun. You also get access to our wonderful Slack, which is where all of our coolest and most knowledgeable pop culture friends are. So that's it. That's the housekeeping. Here's how you can get in touch with this show. Few of you did. We're going to talk about those here in a second. You can send us a raven, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Any thoughts, comments, questions, theories, if you'd like. Anything you really want to say about Alien Earth or anything related to this podcast. That's pretty cool. You can also review us on both Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our rule, of course, is leave us a 5-star rating, say whatever you want. No one said anything this week. We got no new reviews, which honestly makes me even more sad than a negative review, because there's apathy. Apathy is worse than negative energy. So, you know, if you haven't in a while left us a review, do so. You know, it takes like 2 minutes. You know, we greatly appreciate it. Also helps us spread the word about this podcast. Okay. That actually is all of the housekeeping.
All right.
It is time to move on to the calm. And you want to start with this raven? Let's start with this raven.
Let's start with this raven. This raven comes from a frequent listener and occasional writer into our various content that I've been pronouncing Tertale, because that's, you know, a fun way to do it. They're right. I've been enjoying your coverage of Alien Earth so far, and it's been increasing my enjoyment of the show. A question has been tumbling around in my brain, and I'd like to hear your take. The name of the research vessel is Maginot. I think the reference is the Maginot Line, a series of defensive structures to deter invasion of France by Nazi Germany. The Maginot Line was never completed and thus did not prevent Nazi Germany invasion. Since World War II, it has been a metaphor for defensive barriers or expensive efforts that provide a false sense of security. To me, the research vessel being named the Maginot points to the efforts in the pursuit of immortality. The wealthy are trying to avoid death and are pouring all the money possible into it. The twist is that by trying to avoid death, they invite it into their lives in the form of the Xenomorph. Thoughts?
Neil? I like it. I hadn't really thought about the Maginot name and what it might be referencing, but this makes complete sense that it could be named after the Maginot Line. And I think it's a good point in the sense that it also sort of references what Yutani is trying to do here, mm-hmm. right? Which is this idea of like going out to this solar system where LV-426 is, and gathering up all of these specimens to study them. For what purpose, right? You know, we have to return to why would you want to capture a xenomorph in the first place and study it? And this being sort of a foundational element of the Alien franchise, which is the capturing of these specimens means more to this company than its employees, its ships, its billions of dollars. It's like the number one priority, and it's like, why? And I think that a lot of that revolves around being able to use these aliens as a way to further both human evolution, right? Like all these companies seem to be chasing some sort of human immortality or some sort of advanced synthetic immortality situation, but also for weaponry. Right. So like the Maginot's mission could be seen as going out there, finding these species that will help Weyland Yutani develop a stronger defense against the other corporations, or a stronger domination over the other corporations in the types of weapons that they have. Right. Because if like if you're able to take a xenomorph, and like replicate some of its biology and turn that into like a suit for a soldier.
You right. know,
that is a huge advantage if it comes to blows between Weyland Yutani and say Prodigy. So I think, yeah, but you know, as we continue to see in this franchise, it's that hubris that gets them in trouble every time, because they think that they're about to capture the xenomorph and use it to advance their own interests, but the xenomorph has other plans and is a far superior killing machine. So, you know,
well, I think everything has other plans, and like our view of why they want a xenomorph, I think, changes as the franchise evolves. So in the first one, you know, Ash says it's a perfect organism. The company wants it. But at that point, we think it's like entirely new to them. Mm-hmm. And we've since learned that it's not necessarily. In the second one, you know, because it sort of rapidly expands, we're introduced to like the colony idea. And at least I remember, you know, after I think like the third one, when I first became like a big fan of the Alien franchise, this idea that they wanted the alien to be part of like their terraforming efforts, because part of the second one is like Weyland-Yutani is out here terraforming entire planets now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess we've used Earth up. So the idea that you could sort of like drop a species on a planet that would just get rid of all the living species on the planet, and then you could go in and terraform it, was like a possible use of why you could have a controllable xenomorph, why that would be like interesting. Now that we have this like idea of the multiple companies, you do have this sort of like war aspect or weapon aspect that I think is a little bit more believable, because before we had like the dueling companies, when we were always referring to Weyland-Yutani as the company, and in universe they just kind of owned everything for the most part. Then it was like sort of the xenomorph was a capitalism tool.
Mm-hmm.
Now post Prometheus, I see where our listener is coming from, because Prometheus extends the question of why would you want to interact with the xenomorph or do anything, is to like, it has the answer somewhat to like human creation.
Sure.
And maybe that could be like DNA interested. And then Romulus sort of goes in and retcons that, where they've found the black goo by, you know, drilling into old chap from the first movie in cocoon mode. So I do think that Alien Earth is very, very interested in the idea of the pursuit of immortality. Like they've talked about in the show, the person that conquers immortality is going to be the person that conquers space. And we have a nod to it in this one when Kirsch is talking to Joe, where he's talking about Wendy's potential, being like, she could conquer faster than life travel. She could, you know, explore the stars for thousands of years. That is the goal ultimately of immortality. And we know, sure, at
and
least
a
in
great
canon,
sales pitch. I think that's awesome. Like,
yeah,
sign me up for that one. And definitely not going anywhere near the fly.
Yeah, absolutely not going anywhere near the fly. So I think we're seeing a couple things. I think the Maginot Line is just a very broad metaphor for, we're going to spend a whole bunch of money to keep you safe, but you're never going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's immortality or your own life or the joke of shares that we talked about last episode, the Weyland-Yutani sort of corporate hierarchy is a Maginot Line. I don't know if that extends to the thing like the Maginot, the species the Maginot bringing back were, you know, supposed to be used for security.
Mm-hmm.
And I am interested in immortality as all these things come together. So I do think it was something we were talking about right before we started recording, that Noah Hawley usually, and I think very much in this show, is using some very broad thematic strokes, the Peter Pan analogies, and visual strokes like the crossfading to sort of show us what a character is thinking and sort of contextualize. I don't think the show is being very subtle, mm-hmm, with how its themes are sort of mixing and interacting or how we're supposed to be feeling about it. So maybe that is a good time to go directly into our very important philosophical questions of the week, because I added one and then you added one, and I'm wondering if they're the same question, because my question was, whose side are you on? Is it bad I'm still on the eyes side? And your question was, with Arthur gone, is Joe the only sympathetic human character left? So Neil,
mm-hmm,
Joe, I think, is on the second time I watched this episode, I realized like each time we see him, he's setting up this escape plan that I assume he's going to try to execute,
right?
But doing it, you know, pretty well, with not raising as much suspicion as all these other suspicious motherfuckers in this compound. So I'm assuming your question means, if Joe's a sympathetic human, then we're on his side. We want the series to end with a win for Joe.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Is Joe the only human that I'm rooting for at this point? I think the answer is mostly yes. And that is not to disrespect his soldier friends.
Right.
But they definitely seem to be more in the, I don't want to say that it's like a cynical mindset, but just this defeated mindset of this world, of this existence, where it's just like, they are just trying to survive another day, and they are just happy that they like aren't out in space getting killed, or that they are maybe not in New Siam, where we assume there is an outbreak of alien ticks about to happen. So like, it's not to say that they're not sympathetic, and I'm not like rooting for them to survive a little bit, but they seem to not really have ambitions beyond just like, we just don't want to die today. Whereas Joe is actually seems like he wants to save his sister. He wants to get off the island. He seems to be the one who is kind of out of place in this world, in the sense that he still has some critical thinking skills. He still seems aware of the human desire for autonomy and the desire to advance your life, whereas all of the other humans around seem to be fully captivated and fully like beaten down by this system. And I think it actually goes to some of the stuff we were talking about last week, where it's like this world where religion, government, philosophy, science have all been replaced by corporations and their AI has taken away so much of like human autonomy and human intellectualism. And it's funny because Joe is like the only one who seems like he's thinking about stuff. And so I think that in a sense is what one thing that makes him relatively sympathetic. The employee is a prodigy. Even Dame Sylvia this week, they are all making their own beds and will eventually have to sleep in it, I think, right? Like Arthur, in this final act of defiance where he helps Joe, kind of that's his last stand. And probably, at least from a TV writing standpoint, narrative standpoint, is what dooms him. Is right. He like does this good deed. And then it's like, oh, all right, well, I don't know if Arthur's going to make it now. And sure enough, he gets facehuggered like 5 minutes later. So, yeah, I don't know if I think it's like, and I don't have a problem with it. This is not a criticism of the show, because in an alien movie and or show, we kind of have to accept that most of the humans are not going to make it. Right.
Right.
The first Alien movie, one character makes it out alive and
never gets back to Earth again.
Right. And along the way, some sympathetic characters die. Right. Like the guys in the engineering die horribly. But like, you know, a lot of the other characters do really stupid shit that gets them killed. So I think it's like at this point, especially as we barrel down the final couple episodes here, I'm kind of actively rooting for a lot of these humans to get got. Like, it's not, I don't really like, I'm not rooting for that. Boy Cavaliers number two. I haven't been rooting for Boy Cavalier at all. Dame Sylvia, she can go now. Like it's rough out there for the humans. And but I will say this episode did a pretty good job of opening the door to me feeling sympathy for when these hybrids get killed.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like for most of the season so far, we've operated in this space where it didn't seem like they were going to be able to be killed. But now that we've learned about the creature number five, I think the kids are very much in danger.
Yeah, no, I definitely, now that we've found a fly that eats non-organic material, we have some problems.
Yep. But I'm with you. I'm still rooting for the eye.
Yeah, I think
even though he's a little shit.
Yeah, you were like, this episode wasn't too scary. I have a perpetual fear of like locked doors shutting behind me while I prop them up with one foot, because I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah. See, that's something I would never do.
Yeah. See,
I mean, I would never open that door to begin with.
Right.
But I'm definitely not leaving it propped up. Like, at most, I'm like cracking the door open, sliding that tray in, and shutting it very quickly.
Right. I will, like, the other thing I do is just like part of my neuroses is every time I'm walking through like a doorway from like one space into another space, I touch my phone, my keys, and my wallet. So if I do, you know, at least lock myself out, I have usually the keys. But I've like done like a full-on stretch with my one leg back, sort of propping a door open lots of times. I don't know why. So that part's definitely sympathetic. The part that isn't sympathetic is my mom used to work at a preschool when I was growing up. And part of the fun of that was we would get to have like animals, and we would raise them from like young age to like a normal age. And then they would go to like the preschool, so like the kids could watch them and mm-hmm. feed them and learn some responsibility. You do not let children feed any animal that could hurt them unsupervised.
Yeah.
So that's another part of that sequence. But all of that said, I think we were
Dave, yeah. You're conducting an experiment.
Unless you're conducting an experiment.
To see what happens, and you're not as concerned about whether the child dies.
All right, I'll sidestep what I was saying to talk about this, because you're talking about the theory that I've also seen online that door came off a little bit too easily, and maybe it was a test for old Toodles who was aspiring to reach beyond his station. Would be the nice way, I think, of saying that, and therefore had to be part of the experiment for the fly, which eats an organic material very specifically.
Interesting.
If he had tried to feed any of those other characters, we would have not been the situation we're in, probably.
Yeah, I guess that's okay. So the theory then is that Kirsch maybe did that, like messed with the little door,
yeah,
to like set that situation up. I feel like that's taking it a little too far, because okay, and we talked about this maybe last week or the week before, no, probably the week before, when we were talking about Slightly's potential plot,
yeah,
and the fact that Kirsch has been watching him this whole time and is very aware of what's going on. That Kirsch would let it happen. I don't know if I'm willing to go as far as to say like Kirsch is like setting Toodles up to die, but I was not surprised that he would sit there and watch when shit goes wrong.
I mean, this is something that I put in our spare notes, and I don't know if it's me being Hannibal brained because we're watching that for our other podcast, but I get a real sort of like see what happens mm-hmm. feeling from Kirsch.
Yeah. He's doing science.
He's doing science. And then when he asks via the communication device, this one, when he asks Toodles, you know, he asks, is Curly there? And Toodles lies and says he could do it. We don't know if he was going to say, well, then bring Curly,
because mm-hmm.
he doesn't get the chance to say that, and he doesn't insist upon it. So it is very possible that he, you know, wanted some sort of interaction, some sort of test.
Sure.
And what they've been testing the other creatures on is they've either been vivisecting them, like they did with the facehugger, I assume because they have multiples, or like with the eye, they see what happens when it comes up against a species that could maybe run away or defend itself. So it would be a scientific experiment to send one of these hybrids in. I think Kirsch is the only one who'd be willing to pull it off.
Sure.
Because these are very, very expensive. As Adam reminds us with the nib scene, these are products that mm-hmm. haven't been debuted yet. So I don't think outside of Boy Cavalier, anybody else can put them in necessary danger. But Kirsch might be able to do it accidentally.
Yeah. Well, and I also do think that the show has suggested, not subtly, that Kirsch he shares David's post-humanist philosophies.
Yes.
Where it's like, and this is something he has said to the hybrids in not so uncertain terms, where it's like he does not see the hybrids as like humans who have defeated mortality so much as he sees them as the next evolution of synthetic beings, right?
Right.
Like synthetic beings with emotions, maybe. And so he is definitely, I think, kind of just off on his own level of scientific experimentation, right? Like, I bet you there was, in Kirsch's mind, there was a moment where he thought, maybe I should let Boy Cavalier just stick his face in one of those eggs and see what happens. But he thought better of it because he kind of needs the boss for now to fund the operation. But I am 100% a believer that Kirsch was always going to let Slightly go through with his plan and let him infect one of the humans. And I don't even think Kirsch cared which one, with a face hugger, like, because he wants to see that. He wants to see how that goes down.
Yeah. He's David like, and that he wants to see all of it go down. The question I guess that I'm wondering is, there's the discussion with him and Morrow in the elevator and the talk with, Kirsch and Marcy at the very beginning with the Scorpion, and then later in the Wendy body, about like the difference between, or how far humans have come from being like animals, sort of like the aliens or the Scorpions,
sure,
to now these things that think they're better. Do you think he's worried about being supplanted? Do you think he's worried about his place in whatever hierarchy it is? Or do you think he's so far beyond that he is just like David, where the alien species are the only thing that's interesting to him because all this human hybrid stuff is not really that interesting?
I think it's the latter. I think he's so far beyond it that he's just like, this, the alien thing is what I'm most interested in. I also think it's possible that we have misattributed who the crocodile is in this metaphor. What if Kirsch is the crocodile?
Yeah.
And he is, because I think the show is setting us up to believe that maybe Morrow and Kirsch are going to have this confrontation. But I see them, if Morrow were to come a little bit over to the other side onto Team Alien a little bit more, right? If he were less on Team Yutani and a little bit more on Team Alien, they would be allies, right? And I think Kirsch, when he finds out that Wendy is kind of on Team Alien now, I feel like he's going to support that, right? Because I'm pretty sure he's on Team Alien as opposed to like Team Prodigy. He's not a corporate guy anymore. So I would not be entirely surprised if one of this season's turns is that Kirsch is actively going to work against Boy Cavalier in the end. I mean, he's not actively working against him yet, but he's already obscuring the truth from him about what is going down in the secure lab.
Well, he is also a synthetic, so that means he does have hard programming, which means probably like Ash, he can't harm anybody unless the programming says he could, violate that part of his whatever. Sure. So I don't think he
can't harm anybody directly.
Well, that's the thing. He can't harm anybody directly. Or if we're going off of Isomov's laws, he can't cause the death of a human by inaction either. So he can't not tell Boy Cavalier to keep his face away from the egg, no matter how much he wants to, because of his programming.
Although, isn't that what he just did with Arthur?
In what way?
In watching Arthur get a face hugger to the face?
I mean, maybe.
He didn't stop it.
Arthur is also not dead.
I guess that's true.
I don't know what the sort of programming is, but I imagine also the programming, his programming is specific enough where, like Ash, it's like everybody's expendable. You just got to keep the specimen. Everybody's expendables except the specimens and Boy Cavalier. That's the feeling I get.
All right.
So he would have to cause a domino effect that gets Boy Cavalier killed in order to have, to actually have that part of his thought manifest. Sure. So what I was really interested.
Or his primary boss would have to change.
Right. That's where, or Boy Cavalier, gets in the way of him preserving the specimen and like two high level commands cause him to be able to make that decision. But either way, I was a little bit surprised when Morrow tells Yutani that his plan is sort of destabilize the facility. Because I was like, I think that's kind of Kirsch's plan.
Yeah.
Is in order to like,
they're very get close rid of all to being his enemies. On the same page here.
Yeah.
My thought was like, Morrow, you don't need to do much here, bud. They're going to do that on their own. Like,
well, that's the fun thing is I don't know who's going to cause it, but I'm pretty sure the facility is going to be destabilized in the final two episodes season.
They put a bunch of kids in seemingly indestructible bodies and gave them access codes to the secure lab. This shit was always meant to go wrong.
The other one that I'm sort of like interested in and why I'm sort of on the eyes side still is it seems to also be observing the scientific method just from inside. And I think because of its multiple interactions with all the different species now, it's a run between it and Kirsch, which is which one is the actual expert in these five predatory species. Mm-hmm. Because there's a way. I don't know if it's good television or if it's exactly what this series is building to, where the eye like Rube Goldberg itself through several alien and human species to get out of this facility.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the outcomes I'm rooting for the most, is that the eye survives and escapes the islands. Like it doesn't, I don't need it to like, you know, do a bunch of killing or like, you know, defeat the xenomorph or anything crazy like that, but like I want the final shot of this season for it to be like wandering off into the jungle or some shit.
Well, it in somebody that gets off the island,
yeah, or be yeah in somebody, I guess. Well, and that's another question, like what we see what happens to Toodles, we still don't know if the eye could infect or take over one of the hybrids.
Correct.
You know,
and we don't know at what point it would notice whether or not it could, like if it rips out an eye and tries to go in there, does it like,
I mean, it
not went, work, or it wasn't rips out the eye. Can it tell that the eye is not an eye by the time it gets there?
It did just go been, after Nibs. So,
well, and then we got to see Toodles like very purposefully. We get a discussion about an eye popping between Kirsch and Morrow. And then when Toodles gets like dissolved, we see one of his eyes pop into like an egg like goo. So like we got a lot of eye thought going on. They're pointing us in that direction of thinking about it. I don't know. What is it? I guess if it interfaces with this sort of like synthetic biological design that are the Lost Boys, that really goes to answer. I mean, and that just makes me ask a lot of questions. Like, why doesn't it just plug into a computer then? Because we didn't design computers That's with true. Eyes.
Well, then again, maybe it needs like a brain to plug into, right? And as Joe explains to Wendy this week, they have brains, I guess, technically. That's what separates them from the monsters. And I guess the other thing that made me sort of think along these lines is that the nature of the fly and it's the fact that it can eat the inorganic material. And again, the reminder that all of these specimens, from what we understand, come from the same ecosystem, the same solar system. So who says that the eye can't also interface with, you know, synthetic material? Right. Just
so what?
Because we haven't seen him try yet.
That would be funny if like the whole thing that humans are trying to do is get like a human brain to interface with the synth body, and the eyes like just figured that out through evolution, bro. Yeah. Like don't worry about it.
Yep.
I don't know. There's a silly version of this that I don't want to see on Alien Earth, but there's also a cool version of this where the eye becomes a bit of a protagonist. I don't know. While Wendy and the Xenomorph become another protagonist group, that's, I guess, the last part of this groupings that we have to talk about. Are we on their side or not? Wendy, at least at this point, wants to stay in the facility because she's kind of on the side of the creatures. So assuming Wendy and Xenomorph are a team of two, are we on their side? Or does Wendy thinking she could communicate with the xenomorph sort of like that's the hubris of the illusion of control that we run up against every time with this species?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always the danger of that being true. And it will be interesting to see if this show wants to go down the road where like her communicating, her being able to actually communicate with the xenomorph and develop some sort of relationship with it. Because at the moment, it's sort of still very one way situation. She thinks she's communicating. It is looking at her like, you know, when you're like talking to a dog and the dog like turns its head and it kind of looks like the dog understands you, but they don't. Dogs don't speak English. The xenomorph is kind of looking at her like that. Like it's like, wait, what the hell is she talking to me? Like, what is going on here? But we don't really have a full understanding of the intelligence of these xenomorph, at least the drone xenomorphs that we're interacting with. So if they can develop a bond, right, if that's possible, and this xenomorph becomes like protective of Wendy, I'm totally on their side. I think that's awesome. like you're telling me that Wendy is a super, super strong human, human-like, and can live for thousands of years, will eventually create fast and light travel, and now has a xenomorph as like a buddy / protector / pet. That to me is the dream, man. But I can think of a million ways that goes wrong, even for Wendy. So
yeah,
especially once that xenomorph finds out what she did to his cousin.
I mean, maybe, yeah, it could, just because Wendy and xenomorph might eventually be on a team, doesn't necessarily mean we won't end in like an old Yellow situation, right, where it's like you gotta, like the xenomorph comes out totally on her team, really wants to attack Joe though, so she has to, you know, like, yeah, put it down.
I think that's the more important question, is like, can Wendy protect Joe from the xenomorph? Because I do think Wendy in this episode, one of the evolutions that she is going through is similar to what we're talking about with Kirsch, where she's kind of maybe moving into a post-humanist mindset where she's like, I don't know if I want to be part of this human thing anymore if we're going to be like this, right? If they're going to be the kind of species that will just erase memories from my friends, maybe fuck humans. Maybe I should let my xenomorph pet out of his cage and let him just kill all the organic people in this facility. And I should take over. So, but I don't think she would do that to Joe. And I think it would be interesting though, if she can, right? Because that would also, if we're doing the Peter Pan metaphor, Wendy had two brothers, John and Michael.
Yeah.
She's only got one in the show so far. What if the second one's a xenomorph?
Are we naming the xenomorph Michael?
The xenomorph is Michael.
All right, there we go. Yeah, okay. Let's talk about some of these other characters and their interactions with capitalism. Besides just Wendy, for our the Breton Parker Memorial character who most needs a union award, I have a couple. The first, I think, is Wendy, who I do think is on the verge of realizing it during this episode.
Sure. She's actively being radicalized.
Yeah, she definitely starts off as like the person who got their first job on the Google campus. And she's like, guys, this is a place of yes, we're not doing any evil. No is the way to do nothing. Mm-hmm. We got to move fast and break things, which is something that Boy Cavalier sort of paraphrases during the arbitration. But then once she realizes that, like, you know, involves taking your memories and tracking you audio visually and all that, maybe taking I don't know what Wendy's concept of pregnancy is, but taking a pregnancy away from her friend, she, you know, confronts Dame Sylvia, and it looks like she's going to come around and at least think that maybe she should argue that these, they're not human, is where she seems to be like running. Like, she doesn't want to be human. She wants to be something else. But does that something else make her more property to Prodigy, which is what they're trying to enforce this episode with Adam and Nibs? So definitely Wendy.
Yeah.
I think all the citizens of Prodigy.
Absolutely.
Because when during the arbitration, Boy Cavalier keeps referring to them as like my citizens, but definitely he's the one that gets the billions of dollars in payout to, I don't know, distribute to them in script they can't use outside of Prodigy. The building, it sounds like, is still heavily damaged because the ship is still there. They haven't cleared the ship out of the town. So Citizens of Prodigy, not that we need any more reinforcement, but not in a great place.
Yeah.
Under this type of rule.
Yeah. And again, there might be an outbreak of alien ticks that is about to happen in New Siam. That's pretty rough. But yeah, to jump back to the Wendy thing, I also think the conversation she has with Joe is very important, right? Because around like this being a yes place, and he's like, well, the word no actually is useful in some cases, because he's explaining to her of a person with the brain of a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
The concept of like autonomy, right? And consent. And
well, it explained to the brain of a 12-year-old girl who's been put into the body of a synthetic because her parents basically signed away the rights to her.
Yeah. Yeah. Who really, you know, has through this process had been kind of brainwashed out of the whole concept of being her own person, right? They see themselves as part of the Peter Pan story, or as part of Boy Cavalier's I don't want to say his family, but his little menagerie. And Joe is the one who's sort of trying to pop that bubble and say like, well, no, you were a full ass human being before, with like your own space and your own ability to decide what happens to you. And the more she learns about how the corporation views them very much as property, I think that's going to cause further radicalization for her, at least against the corporation, but maybe against humanity itself, which is where having a xenomorph pet slash bodyguard would come in handy for sure.
Yeah. And if we're following the Peter Pan analogy all the way through, Wendy and her brothers do get out of Neverland after becoming sort of like not disillusioned with it, but realizing they have to do some things like grow up.
Yeah.
So it's
you can't live in Peter's delusion forever.
Right. And then finally we have Arthur, who got fired for speaking up, which, union flag right there, but more interestingly is told he needs to leave the island immediately or he'll be shot, and that's where his wife lives.
Yeah.
So that seems like something that you don't want all tied up in your job, and also I think a very convenient way for nobody to notice he's missing until too late, because I'll just be like, well, we fired him, he must have got the F off the island. So we'll see if that's what happens, but I don't love the idea of, I don't know his marital status at the end of this episode. Like, can the company just divorce you from your wife?
I mean, I guess if they feel like they own you, they can do whatever they want. I mean, again, they exist in this world where Adam, old number two, is very nonchalant, I would say, about saying that they're going to shoot Arthur if he's still on the island. So this, I don't think, and no one else in the room seems super surprised when he says,
well,
this.
Well, when that happened, I realized how RoboCop brain I've been, because I was like, companies are just vaguely evil until they shoot somebody on screen, and then I get the parody. But that's me from the unsettledness Verhoeven days. They're doing a very good job of like, this is the type of company that treats human life disposably without having them shot anybody yet.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it illustrates that they live in a world where I don't even think that's an odd thing for any of the companies to suggest that they would do, right? Like if you're infringing upon their, you know, if you trespass on a Weyland Yutani science compound, they would just shoot you. Like there's who's doing oversight? There's no government. There's no, you know, higher authority.
The Five has a system of arbitrators, yeah, which suggests like maybe they have the power to punish.
They govern themselves and each other. And so like, yeah, if they all agree that shooting trespassers is okay, then I guess then they're all doing it. So,
well, there's got to be a way that the Five can punish one of the Five, and maybe we'll deal with that this season, because again, Prodigy, new company in the Alien franchise, mm-hmm, we don't know, or we haven't heard of them existing past this point, so maybe we will see whatever punishing power the Five have at this point.
Sure.
But certainly it seems like not a lot at this point. There's not an actual governing body that,
yeah, and it doesn't like seem like the vibe we get from this meeting between Boy Cavalier and Ms. Yutani is that they don't really respect this process either.
Right.
Like this is all for show. So I don't.
But there is like bylaws. They talk about the quarantine, mm-hmm, you know, laws and stuff like that. So there's some shared understanding, but it's definitely not a government. Yeah. So I agree with you on
that.
They
have some laws on the books that none of them seem to follow.
Right. Some laws on the books that seem to be very performative unless you decide to execute, sure, them.
Well,
which are a lot of laws, and I've learned this year in America.
And in true like capitalistic fashion, they have laws on the books, but it's really just so they can sue each other.
Right.
When they break them. It's not so that they follow the laws.
They just need something to think about. Some blackmail.
Yeah. It's really just so that they can like extort money out of each other. It has nothing to do with like protecting people or, you know, keeping the earth safe from invasive species.
So we've been tracking the abilities of Wendy and the Lost Boys. This episode, we learned that they could go 2 years between a recharge, which is pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. But now I have two questions for you here in this section. One is, do you think like, does Wendy understand what the alien is saying? She talks about like the dialect being weird, mm-hmm, but like, does she understand?
I think she thinks so. We're not going to know until that thing, until somebody opens the door and she says, "Don't kill me."
Or right.
Like, "Don't kill Joe." And we see if it understands that, right? Like there's no real way for us to, because there's no subtitles. So we're not even the audience, not really privy to what's going on there. But she does seem pretty sure that she is communicating in a specific way, not just like not like you would communicate with like a duck call.
Right.
But actually having some sort of conversation. And until we see the actions of the xenomorph, I don't think we will ever be able to know for sure. But I'm rooting for her. I think it would be awesome. I don't think it bodes well for Wendy surviving very long in this story world, right? Mm. Like maybe a couple seasons, because you kind of can't have a character who can talk to the xenomorph. That is a canon, right. That's more than a canon bending thing. That kind of breaks it. But unless they're gonna break it like intentionally, which could also be very fun.
What is more executive producer Ridley Scott than being like, here's your Alien sequel. It's about something new now.
That is true.
That's the way it's gone.
Ridley Scott's, you know, as much as he is protective of this franchise as like his thing and this thing that he created, and he obviously has had not so nice things to say about the ones he was not involved in, a lot of that is around like how it looks.
Right.
Not so much about the canon of the like story details. And having interviewed Ridley Scott, one of the more entertaining things about him is that he just kind of doesn't care.
Yes.
Like, he will, if he thinks the idea is going to be interesting, he does not give a shit about keeping canon continuity perfect across all of these movies. He's like, fuck it. She can talk to the alien. Let's go. Let's see where that leads. And I think that that's, you know, that's fun. And having Ridley Scott on board with this is what allows Noah Hawley the space to maybe do something like that, to be like, well, you know, Sir Ridley said it was cool. Let's go.
Yeah. Now, I think Ridley Scott, the impression I get from him is he is happy to have the rights that he could executive produce this franchise, because that helps him get movies that he would like to be made. Mm-hmm. Made. If it's a story that he thinks fits in the world, he doesn't really care about what that plot is. Yeah. He's just like, yeah, cool, that does it. Which is interesting, because like Aliens by Cameron and then David Fincher's Alien 3 sort of by accident are like switching what like a genre of a, you know, alien film can be. And more towards like trying to straddle that action line. And then Ridley Scott came back and it's like, what if it was more philosophical? And now we have this mix of stuff that can be philosophical, it can be horror, it can be action, and ultimately is making us question what it's like to be human. I bet Ridley Scott's just super happy about that. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, that's great. And then people will be like, well, what about, like, you know, this aspect of like the alien life form? And he's like, who cares? You're paying too much attention. I made House of Gucci. You know who you're talking to?
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy who let Ben Affleck do that accent in The Last Duel, if you've seen The Last Duel. You know, and he's like, I don't give a shit about accuracy. Like, some things matter, and for Sir Ridley, I think a lot of them are like, you know, the visual harmony of the franchise, which this show has nailed down, and some of like the thematic elements. But I think that if he feels like Noah Hawley has an interesting story to tell where Wendy can speak the language of the xenomorph, he's going to let him go and do it.
Yeah. And then my final thing is more of a television writer's question. It has been, I think, since the investigation of the crash that we've seen Wendy reach out of her own body and interact with the Prodigy Network. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're hiding that to build up to like a big moment where she's able to control something she shouldn't be able to control? Because we've spent a lot of time not talking about that aspect of her miracleness, because now she could talk to an alien. Everybody's much more interested in that.
Sure.
But she's also the only of these hybrids that seems to be able to, I don't know, wirelessly reverse the flow of information.
I don't know if they've necessarily been hiding it. It's more kind of like what the other thing you suggest, which is they've been distracted by other things. But it does still feel intentional that they put it in there at the beginning, that to set up this idea that there are other ways in which Wendy is special. And that does feel like something that will come back into play as Wendy becomes more and more disillusioned with her situation in Prodigy. Like, she, for much of this episode, is like, I don't want to leave, you know, sorry, Joe, I like it here. This is a yes place. But by the end of this episode, I don't believe that at all. I believe that she is on a path to go the other direction. And because of what she's seeing happen with Nibs, and I imagine once she finds out about what else happened in the secure lab, she's going to be thinking maybe I should get my newfound second brother xenomorph out of here before something terrible happens to him, kind of deal. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think she's going to use it again. And that is one way, because like what they did to Nibs this week sets up the possibility that like Prodigy does have a little bit more control over the hybrids than they let on, right? Like, they're, because we talked about it with Kirsch, where it's like there's a failsafe somewhere that prevents Kirsch from just like snapping Boy Cavalier's neck.
Right.
Because otherwise Boy Cavalier would not talk all of this shit to Kirsch. Right?
Yeah.
But the hybrids are supposed to be different. But we are also...
Why can't they rewrite those things?
We're also seeing that they're not entirely different. That there are like safety protocols that they've put in place. So setting up the fact that Wendy would be able to circumvent those safety protocols is feels like a very important story point for the last two episodes of the season.
When Wendy told Nibs, like, don't worry, you could remember, I was like, I wonder if that's possible for Wendy. Mm-hmm. Like, would Wendy be able to look at like a blank space in her mind created by somebody else and infer what's there,
sure.
Like built, reverse build it.
Or would Wendy be able to manipulate the system in a way to give Nibs the memories back?
Yeah. Interesting questions. All right. Monster Index, big entry this week, maybe titular entry. I'm fine with calling what we've been calling the wasp, the fly.
Sure.
You know what I don't like? I don't like its little penis face. I mean, I get why it's excellent creature design. It's keeping like a weird sexual element. But when a little proboscis came out of its ball sack there at the front of its head, I was like, gross.
It is funny that this week was the week I saw a clip going around on Twitter from a deleted scene from Alien Covenant of like the shower scene where the xenomorph kills the lady in the shower. And it like first it puts its tail like up between her legs to like grab her. And people are like, This is why Alien Earth... it doesn't feel right because it's not as like psychosexual. And I'm like, hey, until you see the little penis flies this week, you're like, nope, this is exactly the franchise we have been operating in. I mean, it's a cable TV show. So, but weird creature design.
Yes, it's a cable TV show. So they had to leave the foreskin on the penis fly's face. That's... Anyway, I'm enjoying this new monster. I love the twist that it is a threat to non-organics rather than organic people. It makes a little bit more sense to me why we haven't dealt with it yet.
Right.
And why it's been biding its time. It does sort of interest.
It makes it make less sense why Tootles would go anywhere near opening the door to that thing. But he's a child's brain, apparently.
Yeah, it does interest me that they have that, acid, the thing that dissolves the synthetic tissue into a goop they could slurp up with their penis faces.
Yeah.
That is an interesting aspect to me. It does seem like they only use it to feed. I don't know how smart they are because it's one of them stopped by a grate when it's going after Slightly. Mm-hmm. And you would think if it knew that it had like this dissolution of inorganic material thing, it would just spit on the grate. But maybe it's not that smart. Maybe it's just
sure.
It could smell the inorganic stuff and pukes on it.
Or maybe it needs a minute. Like we cut away pretty quickly. So like,
that's true.
You know, I'm still worried about Slightly in there. And I think the most frightening thing is that these things are out now.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I think that grate might hold them for a time, but I don't think that they're going to be in that secure lab forever. And, you know, I wonder how much longer it's going to take Kirsch and company to get back and whether or not they're going to be able to secure that site again. Or whether this is, we've already crossed over to the point where these creatures are going to be running around.
Yeah. And this is a creature that is sort of built to get out of a room in a non-organic space. So a whole new additional thing added. It would have been weird if a xenomorph like destroyed a computer interface because I'd be like, how does it know that one opens the door? It isn't weird if something that eats non-organic material just vomits on everything to suck it up.
Yeah.
And that causes all sorts of technical problems.
And all the red lights turn on all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm into it. You had mentioned before we might have some ticks in New Siam. I have noticed that I don't think I've seen them in Prodigy, as far as I can remember. Or maybe
they have the ones that are like in the jar that were full of blood that were just sort of like soaking in the blood.
So they have some, but we haven't seen them or any experiments on them or confirmation, as we saw last week, that they might still be on the Maginot Wreck that's in the middle of Prodigy City.
I refuse to believe that it is some sort of accident or irrelevant thing that they showed us that there were like hundreds of them on the Maginot. Right? Like, no way, man. That whole tower, I don't think Boy Cavalier needs to worry about the building falling down from them removing the ship. The building's going to be clear of people soon enough from those ticks.
And then I have a question for you, Neil. Do you think this is the type of fun series that will say, here are five species, and then never have the Audrey 2 do anything?
No way. Of course it's going to do something. And I also think that whatever it is has to be some sort of escalation, right?
Right.
Because so far we started with like the baseline being the xenomorph, and Wendy was able to defeat, as Kirsch reminds us, a full on adult male xenomorph with her bare hands. So like that kind of brought the threat level down as far as like, if that xenomorph got loose in the Prodigy facility there, it's a threat to like the humans.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even most of the hybrids would probably be able to survive that situation. But everything we've learned about all of the other creatures has sort of escalated the situation even further. Almost like these creatures evolved to be able to live alongside a xenomorph and not die. So I feel like, especially after this episode, now that we've seen what the fly can do, whatever Audrey 2 can do has got to be impressive. Like, it's got to be fun. And I think it's obviously waiting for its moment, and its moment is coming. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I can't wait to see what it's been hiding.
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe it's really tough. Maybe nothing on this in this show is fully equipped to handle it. Maybe we need like a predator.
Ooh, that would be interesting. wait for the storm, Neil. I also think maybe us not seeing what it does means the eye hasn't seen what it does, which means it could be a potential obstacle for our little eye guy getting out.
Maybe.
But again, it depends a lot on what it does.
They also might come from the same planet, so. The eye might be like saving it. He's like, I know what that thing does, and I'm not going to wake it up just yet.
I still like my idea from the first two episodes that it reverses into like a Bulbasaur, that there's an animal in there.
Hell yeah.
And it's not just a plant, but we will have to see what happens. Neil, odds of hybridization consent. So here's the thing. Wendy's arc this episode shows a lot of growth. She might be the most powerful thing on the show, if I believe she's capable of communicating with the alien and self-actualizing in 1 hour of television.
Yeah.
Or in a couple of days of, living. That actually seems good. Kirsch's description of her being like this infinite creative and inventive and engineering potential person, that seems interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But you point out a good point. Having a company being able to tinker with whatever your memory, whatever you are remembering, and a little bit of your cognition, because it sounds like they turned that down for Nibs a little bit.
Yeah.
Is not a great knob to have on your body machine.
Concerning,
I don't think,
to say the least. Especially because, as we're reminded by this episode, the end goal here is to be able to sell this as a product to people, to be like, you can live forever inside of this synthetic body. But like, what's the privacy policy on this? Like, what if, you know, if your synthetic body needs maintenance, for example, and you have to go into a Prodigy maintenance facility every once in a while and you know, get a tune up, who's to say they can't get in there and not only see everything that you've done in your life since you got your new body, but also tinker with your memories, tinker with your cognition, you know, turn your intellectual capacities up and down. Like, that is not great. Also, I wouldn't put it past them to do that shit and not tell anyone.
Right.
So that makes me less likely. I'm still on board, but I want the Wendy skill set. I don't want the slightly skill set.
Right.
I want to be able to radicalize very quickly, discover my own autonomy, and blow up their computer system very quickly so that I can get off of this island and go live amongst the stars and with my xenomorph brother and my human brother.
Yeah. So I guess that means you would have to be part of the pilot program in order for that to happen. So. Because in order for this to become a consumer version product, which is, I think, everybody's temptation, there's no way they don't literally own you the second that happens.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, we should have been more concerned, I guess, from the moment we saw them be able to look through the hybrid's eyes and record all of that. Like, why would you buy a product that now, well, then again, as we discussed earlier about like the soldiers, the people who live in this world are in this sort of persistent state of desperation where mm-hmm. it's like the corporations now just own everything anyway. And I don't know if there's any level of collective action that is going to reverse this, right?
Actually, that's interesting. Maybe in the story world, I do want to be hybridized because they will care more about me if they literally own me.
Yeah.
Than if they just own my labor.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm infinitely replaceable.
Well, maybe that's
basically having slave children.
Maybe that's sort of like the logical end point of what Siberian is talking about when she's like, well, at least I know where the monsters are. At least I'm getting paid. At least I'm still alive. It's like, well, if I now have a corporate branded body, maybe life will be slightly less shitty for me. And I guess I get to live longer.
I have the same fight I'm having against the corporation, but I have a computer brain
sure.
and super strength, and maybe I could pull one over.
Well, and I don't even know if we have seen very little evidence yet. And we haven't spent much time with like the average people of this world. We've seen very little evidence that anyone's fighting against the corporations. Like, I feel like
yes.
it seems like society has accepted the fate of like the corporations just own us now. There's nothing we can do. It's sort of a defeatist worldview that has taken over. But, you know, when it's gone that far, I don't entirely blame them because, you know, how do you claw back any sort of human autonomy and power from five corporations that now own literally every inch of your lives?
Yep. What a fun time over.
Sounds on awesome. Alien Can't Earth. Wait to get there in our own real world. We're on our way.
Yeah. I do. Let's see. We talked about the crossfade imagery a little bit, but I did want to point out before we get out of the column that I really like that aspect of the directorial
same
style of this series. And it's been interesting to see how certain directors use it. This one, especially when Slightly's thinking about how he needs to get Joe into the lab to get the egg to open. We see the egg crossfading over his face. I think it's really interesting and direct way to be like, here's what he's thinking about, as opposed to like some other more, I think, thematically weaving ones, which is how it's previously been used, which this episode also has. Mm-hmm. So what a great way to make this look interesting with some crossfading imagery.
Yeah. They've been using it in a very diverse way where it's like sometimes it is, you know, when he's talking to Morrow, we can see both of them to communicate that this conversation is only happening sort of in his head over a long distance. And I know, like, it's funny because some folks online have, like, clowned on the show a little bit for some of the ones where, like, they're crossfading the character from Ice Age over Wendy. But, yeah. You know, that's a silly one. They've done it to really excellent dramatic effect elsewhere in the series. And I think it's a great choice because it feels like a very unique, you know, like this show has a very obviously polished look, but it also has a very unique visual toolkit that it's using that I think makes it feel fresh.
Yeah. And then we finally get the invasive species line from our opening this episode. What did you think about it, Neil?
Well, it's funny because, you know, we have it in the podcast opening because it's from the trailer. And I was every time I hear it, because I listen to it several times every week as I'm editing the episode, I was kind of wondering, I was like, which character actually says this line? Because, like, who the hell is British on this show? And sure enough, it's Boy Cavalier, Samuel Blenkin himself, with a little bit of an accent break corner where his Englishness comes through for the first time, I think. And for some reason, delivering that sequence of lines, he just kind of can't fully do it in the Americanized Boy Cavalier accent. So it was kind of funny to me, but great delivery. And, you know, doing it as he's like crawling across the table towards Yutani is fantastic. So it's worth the wait. And I'm willing to forgive a little bit of accent break there because it's a good delivery.
Because maybe I would say it in a little bit of a British accent.
Yeah, right. While I mean,
taunting Miss Yutani.
How do you not do it in a slightly evil British accent?
And then our closing hard rock quarter this week is Keep Away by Godsmack. I am loving these closing songs because it's just like remembering my youth. Very specifically, I was a Godsmack fan because they were part of a movement in metal music that I really appreciated that also was big with bands like Korn. But basically, you have a very aggressive bass part that is synced up to the kick drum part. That's sort of like Godsmack sound to make them sound like really intense. But it's also hilarious because the lead singer writes all the song lyrics and is constantly telling people to stay away from him, but also complaining about how alone they are. I just think that's a great subject matter for this band that has this very growly lead singer. So we get Keep Away by Godsmack. It was basically like the single that made them popular. It wasn't their most popular single. That was I Stand Alone. Again, he's all alone. Why is he alone? Well, on like the album that I had that had like Whatever and Voodoo on it, in like Whatever, which was towards the beginning of the album, there's a Better Fucking Go Away like part to the verses. And then for Voodoo, that's at the end, he's like, I'm not the one that's so far away, implying that we've gone too far away from him. Maybe it's because you told us that's where to go. Anyway, Godsmack. I love it.
Godsmack, the original innovator of 6 feet of distance.
Yeah, exactly. I think I still am hoping for some evanescence in the last two episodes. But we will have to discuss if that happens next week.
Listen, there is an opportunity for Wendy to wake up fully. And
be saved.
Yeah, that would be, I think, just a chef's choice needle drop after like a penultimate episode.
Wake me up. Anyway, we will talk more about next week's episode in the storm. But if you decide to hop off, that's absolutely fine. We will see you next Wednesday. Otherwise, here we go. Storm time.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
I am the storm, brother. The first storm and the last.
All right. storm time. We're going to talk about next episode, Emergence, in just a second. But I do want to ask you here in the storm a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. One is, given the elevator interaction between Kirsch and Morrow, we've been talking about Morrow being the Captain Hook and then Captain Hook and Boy Cavalier Peter Pan. So wouldn't Captain Hook have to face down Peter Pan? Now that you've said maybe Kirsch is the crocodile, are we actually going to get a Kirsch-Morrow showdown that distracts from the Peter Pan-Captain Hook showdown we thought we'd be having?
Well, yeah, but I think that it could be another triangle scenario, as the Alt-J song suggests. The other needle drop in this episode.
Scenario.
Where, and this is important, going with what we were talking about with Kirsch and the potential programming that he has, where it's like he can't hurt Boy Cavalier, but could he stand there and watch Morrow hurt Boy Cavalier? Could he get into a situation where he allows the Captain Hook to do something bad to the Peter Pan? So I do think that there will be a further showdown, especially because of Morrow's line where he's like, I'll see you later, old toy. Or I'll see you soon. Mm-hmm. I do think that there's going to be a showdown, but especially now that we know, now that it seems like it's going to be on the island, the chances of Boy Cavalier also being there are pretty high. So I think it's maybe a three-way convergence of people, and that would give Kirsch an out, I guess, where something very bad could happen to Boy Cavalier. And he wouldn't have to do it necessarily, but he could be around and not necessarily stop it. If it's Morrow, Kirsch, Boy Cavalier, and one of the specimens, and Kirsch decides that in order to save the specimen, he needs to let Morrow hurt Boy Cavalier. That feels like a loophole.
Yeah.
In his Asimov's rule number one, law, first law.
Well, there's a way if the lab's compromised that Morrow now has like the one untainted specimen. Mm-hmm. Like if let's say everything in the lab needs to be destroyed, pisses Wendy off or whatever, that's fine.
Sure.
But then the.
Or if Wendy gets out of there with the xenomorph, who we have.
Or Wendy gets out of there with the xenomorph.
We have seen a xenomorph in the jungle. We don't yet know if that is the xenomorph that Wendy's been talking to or if that's the one that's about to come out of Arthur.
I think it's the one Wendy's been talking to because if you look at its dome, it has like the new Michael has a very distinct dome to the other xenomorphs we've seen. Yeah. That appears to be the one that we see in previews getting out and about. But strangely, that is not in the episode 7 promo. It's just been in other promos.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think we could end this series with like, and the xenomorph is free by itself.
And now it's the xenomorph's island.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe we could. Yeah. That would be an interesting thing.
It's not how Jurassic Park ends.
Very, very true. So in the promo for Emergence.
Hey, what's interesting about this, Dave, this episode title? Emergence what? Is a word that sort of means waking up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm really hoping for an Evanescence next week.
If there ever was a time.
It'd be so perfect. So I've been able to put together some of the shots. I would watch the teaser yourself because they've sort of like been mixed up. But from what I can tell, a lot of the characters are going to get out of the facility finally and be on their way to the beach. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're all going to get to the beach, but it appears like they do. So there's Wendy and Joe outside. Mm-hmm. From previous things we've seen this season on this season trailer, there's Wendy and Joe and Nibs outside. And in this Emergence promo, there's a shot of Nibs being with Curly. And it looks like Wendy and Joe are being like, we need to get out of here. We're not safe here. Mm-hmm. So I would assume Curly's with them, but Curly does seem to be like the Tinkerbell analog, did seem to be closer to Toodles. Curly could maybe stay along. So I only know for sure that Wendy, Joe, and Nibs end up getting out into the jungle, presumably sure. Doing whatever Joe's plan is.
Do you also think and that Curly would be the most likely to turn on them? back towards,
yeah, in theory,
you know, to narc them out to Boy Cavalier, basically, because she, you know, the show took time out of its season, out of its eight episodes that it has, to establish her ambition to be like his favorite. I think that if Wendy goes fully transforms to this place where she's like, all right, now we got to get the hell out of here. I got to get my two brothers out of here. And Curly hears that plan. She might go along with it at first, but ultimately side with Boy Cavalier.
Yeah, it would also be interesting if she does get both of her brothers out. So everybody's out, but you obviously, the Xenomorph's taken its own route.
Sure.
But I think either way, it's to the docks. That's what it appears like. There's a shot of what looks like Joe and Wendy on the docks. We heard about the docks with the soldiers, Siberian, this week. So I think they're basically flag pointing there. Mm-hmm. Then we have Slightly and Smee. So Slightly's hidden Arthur under his bed, gets Smee involved to help him because Smee wanted to play this week. And this is going to be, I guess, a version of that. There's a shot of them floating Arthur down like a river. So they're sort of like chest deep and Arthur's on some sort of flotation device. Mm-hmm. And then there's a shot of Smee. It looks like kind of crying on the beach. It's from top down and you can see some drag marks and you can see Arthur's hands at the top of the frame. So that means that they get him to some sort of beachy situation.
Sure.
Presumably to meet Morrow. And then the meeting Morrow part, we see some soldiers coming out of the water onto the beach. They're all dressed in black. We saw this episode that the people that are stationed for Prodigy, they're kind of wearing those green ponchos. So I assume this is whatever group Morrow's coming in with, that Yutani's provided them with to sort of take Arthur off the island, which doesn't seem like something that should be able to happen in Alien Earth, given what we know about the canon and whatnot. So it seems like all of this gets everybody outside, but on the This Season on Alien Earth series of promos, we do have that shot of everybody except all of the hybrids except for Toodles in that cage.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't gotten there yet, so I do think they're thwarted. At the end of the promo, Wendy's very emotionally yelling, "What did you do to somebody?" I assume that could be like Curly,
right?
That could be Kirsch, that could be Slightly if they all sort of get together and in that sort of situation. But I do think whatever happens, they get recaptured, and now we know why Toodles wasn't there, because Toodles' face has been dissolved. Mm-hmm. But I do think that's the perfect reason to bring back Wendy. Can just unlock the door to that fucking cage,
sure.
Because they kept her all wired up,
yeah.
So I don't exactly know what I want to see in this episode, given it's the penultimate one and given that they have to eventually get caught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it does feel like, again, this show has been gently lying to us in its marketing and in what the people behind it have said to us. So my gut instinct on this is that most of this is like, before the first commercial break stuff. Like, they try to get to the beach, something goes wrong, they get captured, you know, and then something else happens in the episode that we don't get to see yet. Because, you know, it is the penultimate episode. So I'm expecting kind of an all hell breaks loose situation to happen. And I would imagine you would want to end an episode like that in a place where we get some sort of big reveal that moves the story forward in a significant way going into the finale. Right. Like, I don't think this is the episode where you start killing off all of the like higher ups of Prodigy just yet, but you know, let me lay a theory on you. What if they do all of this piece moving around, like they get to the beach, they try to escape, it goes poorly, maybe Curly turns on them, they get captured again, and then the rest of the episode is about finding some way to escape or get Wendy to the xenomorph. And we end with the reveal. And this is what I would call a high risk, high reward type of scene, potentially, where we get into a situation where Wendy frees the xenomorph from its cage, and then she tells it to do something and it does it. Right? Like,
all right.
Like Wendy's about to try to escape. She's used her abilities to manipulate the system to get back into the secure lab. She releases the xenomorph. They walk out into the hallway and are confronted immediately by like the soldiers, for example. And she does the little clicky noises and tells it to go after them. And it like gives her a look and then sprints down the hallway and murders all the soldiers. Like, that has a very very high risk of being a very silly scene. But I think it also, if you pull it off correctly and like we get to that point in the series or that point in the episode where we become so emotionally invested in, or maybe the episode does a lot of work to maybe give us doubt that it's going to work. Right. Like maybe it spends some time telling us that Wendy can't actually communicate and control the xenomorph, but then in the end she can. So it's like a Neo can see the Matrix moment where it's like, oh shit, she actually can talk to this thing. And now we are all fucked. And I think that'd be an interesting place to end your penultimate episode. So I think that could be something that's like buried in all of this footage that we're not seeing and could help us get to the point where the xenomorph is outside, you know, maybe for the final episode.
Yep. I'm interested in all that. I would say I like all of that. I do think the cliffhanger for this episode has to be something else. Mm. I just don't know what it would be. Like, somebody finally gets to Boy Cavalier and hurts him and he bleeds white.
That could be one. That could be another one, yeah.
Some such thing. It could be really big, like, you know, Maro does seem to get off the island with, like, another xenomorph. I don't know if that's too many xenomorphs, but Arthur technically has a xenomorph in him, mm-hmm. and the Alien franchise loves to play fast and loose with how long those things take to incubate. So
yeah,
we could end next week's episode with another xenomorph.
We don't know why Smee is like crying on the beach. It could be because he just watched something, a chest burster come flying out of Arthur. That would be fairly traumatic.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think we're in a good place. Part of me is like, too much of this needs to happen, but I actually don't think that much needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I just think there's a lot of possibilities.
Sure.
There's a lot of ways I would feel satisfied, but I am sort of like reaching between the eyeball and what you're outlining. I want them to reach for something stupid and to like hit it really strongly. I want them to try something. I want them to high wire these last two episodes.
Yeah, I do. I think. And this isn't like a huge criticism of the show, but I do feel like we've spent a lot of time yarn walling a lot of like fun potential theories that dig into the canon or like that, you know, create this canon stew that would be really interesting. But the show is presenting a slightly more simple story than what we're expecting. But with two episodes to go, I still think there's plenty of room for it to have a few really fun twists.
Yeah, it's a simple plot, but each turn they take opens up a bunch of fun questions, mm-hmm. which I think is ultimately what I want from it, which is why I'm enjoying it so much. Like we being me and my group of friend chat that has recently been added, have been debating about like how stupid everybody is and whether that sort of like an extension of what we were talking about last week, how much capitalism is to blame for those mm-hmm. things being stupid. And you know what? All good conversations. Yeah. I see why, since these were the first six episodes given to critics and they haven't seen the next two, that a lot of the thing was like, this is the Andor of Alien, because I don't think it has that depth in the show, but it allows the Alien franchise to expand to that depth. When if you think about it, for like two decades, maybe, this was just scary monster in space corridors.
Yeah.
That was what an alien movie was. Mm-hmm. So it's fun that, you know, Prometheus-like, we're now expanding the universe in fun that ways.
Damon Lindelof had to come along and make it this high-minded, philosophical, we got to challenge God and what it means to be a human situation. That guy, man.
And then finally, with this expanding universe, Neil, are we going to see Yautja in this series?
I mean, I still think there's plenty of time. Unfortunately, we still haven't seen any evidence of a Yautja. But, you know, I don't think that there's enough time necessarily to bring a predator into this story, but there is enough time, especially if this show, you know, in a similar vein to what you were just talking about, which is every time it, you know, takes a little bit of a turn, it opens up a new pathway to a dozen different storylines that it could tell. I do think there's enough time to hint at like a season two predator appearance, right? There's enough time to tie into that part of the universe enough to get us thinking about how this might intersect with something like Predator Badlands. And then also thinking about how maybe a predator could show up in a second season. And I think that would be enough for me. I don't need to see like a predator decloak on this island, you know, and like save Wendy or some shit, or like Morrow to show up with his, you know, his team.
Gun.
And then all of a sudden, yeah, they've got like plasma rifles, or like all of a sudden Morrow like pulls out a communication device and presses a button and a predator comes flying in or some shit. We don't need any of that. But I still think
I would actually like Morrow shows up and a little shoulder rifle pops up with the three little dots and just be like, yeah, that's technology they have.
Yeah.
I would be like, okay, that's fine.
Part of his cyborg kit. That could be fun. Yeah. So like just there's still plenty of time for some hint that this show wants to connect to the larger world that includes Predator.
I have two thoughts about this. One is, if I wanted to get stupid, what's more stupid than here's a Yautja that was there all the time?
Yeah. I mean, that's also
on possible. The other hand, that might be like really quickly ruin the first stupid thing I like by just doubling down on the stupid. Like that might be like skipping a stupid step. If this series is building to, she can treat the alien sort of like a friend or a dog, then hey, there's a predator might be too stupid. I don't think you could do both of them.
It is something that I think if we end this first season with Wendy and one of the xenomorphs still alive and she can communicate with it and it's like on her side now, the only thing that would challenge them in a future season, the only thing that would be a threat to them would be a Yautja, right? Because like humanity is screwed at that point, right? Especially if Wendy decides that humanity is screwed, because now she's got, you know, a xenomorph. So I do think that that could be an interesting pathway, because it's like, yeah, it's fun to imagine like Wendy invents faster than light travel and can travel around the universe for 1,000 years, but also a predator is chasing her.
I like this weird idea that like Wendy just goes to like a place that's like has an open space to like live with the predator. And every once in a while, the predator like brings her a cocooned neighbor and she's like, no, bad predator. And the predator's like, how do I please you, queen?
Well, yeah, no, it's like sitcom. If Wendy can conquer the xenomorph, that puts her way up the list of like, because, you know, the whole predator thing, their whole society is built around we need to go kill the alpha killer of the universe. Right. That's why they were messing around with the xenomorph in the first place. So if Wendy is able to control and conquer, quote unquote, a xenomorph, that I think bumps her up the list as far as like a predator wanting to show up and take her on.
Well, Neil,
just saying, could be fun.
seems like we are all set up for a penultimate episode of Alien Earth next week. Can't wait to see what it is. Can't wait to debate both the finale and what season two is going to be. Hopefully we get some official season two words before or directly after the finale. We'll see what happens. But until then, go out there. And you know what? If you could talk to the alien, just make sure he's real nice. Maybe
tell him
maybe
to stay away from me.
Yeah.
Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.